There's an incredible amount of data out there. In fact, you know, we have over 200 million publications in our pool and over 209 million authors.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is on how pharma can use artificial intelligence for intelligent literature monitoring. Now, most medical affairs teams need to identify the most clinically impactful content for competitive intelligence, compliance, and evidence generation. But to do this, they typically use therapeutic landscape research, competitive intelligence, and outsourced literature reviews and reports. However, these days, by using artificial intelligence, these can be done much more thoroughly and reduce time and costs by 88%. Today, I'm with Richard Graves, the co-founder of Sosero, whose language intelligence platform harnesses artificial intelligence to support life sciences and medical affairs teams, including powering their augmented intelligent literature monitoring service. So happy to have you on the show, Richard. Thank you so much for coming. Maybe we could start with a little bit about your background, how you got into this, and what actually led you to co-found Sosero.
Absolutely. And it's a real pleasure to be here. And thank you for inviting me today. My background is actually an interesting one. I've worked in scaling science-based solutions, but not always actually in the life sciences. I actually got my start a long time ago as a journalist. I was covering both climate and health. So both climate science and health science. Journalism has been struggling at times. And back then, you know, they combined two beats in one. I think it was pretty interesting. So I had to learn two fields of advanced science at once. And, you know, what I found out that while I loved learning about topics, it wasn't enough for me to just cover them. I felt like I had to roll up my sleeves and do something about it. I spent a lot of my career working on climate science and actually solutions in the climate and energy space, and particularly used a lot of data and AI to support the development of new solutions, including in renewable energy and community solar. What brought me to this space is, like many people, I had a serious health issue in my family. Both of my parents have experienced cancer. My father had a very rare cancer. And I spent a year actually as a caregiver interfacing with the healthcare system, interfacing with the complexity as doctors tried to handle, look at, and figure out, you know, when there was a very rare cancer, it wasn't the ones that they normally looked at.
And later
when my co-founders, Dipanita and Walter at Sorcero, really opened up this opportunity to apply data science and AI, which I spent my career working on, to solve this other huge problem, which we're going to speak to, which is really harnessing innovation and all the knowledge in scientific literature to improve patient outcomes, I really jumped at the chance.
Wow. And so tell me about your AI-powered literature monitoring service.
Absolutely. So at Sorcero, we're called a language intelligence platform. Mm-hmm. So we power a number of applications, and our longest serving one has been intelligent literature monitoring. And what's really key is that for the teams that we serve in life sciences, they spend a tremendous amount of time and effort trying to generate evidence from literature, looking often at across an entire field of research, often distilling it into assets, disease state decks, and others to both support, you know, key opinion leaders and healthcare providers and to actually keep up with the deluge of literature.
Yeah.
And deluge it is. You know, the amount of literature that is having to be tracked has gone up 36% on a compound annual growth rate.
I remember at one stage, and this was a long time ago, noticing that there was about 5,000 new articles every week just in oncology.
It's more than that now. Yes. Absolutely. We have single customers in subfields of oncology that are experiencing that volume every week.
Wow.
Just in metastatic breast cancer, for example.
Yeah. Incredible.
And it's what I would say is an incredible challenge for the teams that have to stay on top of it, but it's also an incredible opportunity. There's never been more knowledge. There's never been more findings. There's never been more data. And in fact, there's never been more treatments. And that's all essential, and it's revolutionary. I have a family member who is currently has metastatic breast cancer and is on a combination therapy that is just game-changing. Versus 8 years ago, what was frankly radiation and chemo is the only option. That's an incredible, incredible win for patients. The challenge is there's actually been published research on the sheer flood of literature is getting in the way of innovation because it's too much to harness. And that's where RAI comes in. And what we realized was that there were specific things that people need to know. In the literature, and there's just too much of it to get from a fully manual review. I'll give you one example. Our AI actually reads the literature. So we don't just apply NLP, natural language processing. We apply a subfield or a more advanced field, however you want to describe it, of natural language understanding. And what that means is natural language understanding allows you to do something interesting, which is the next step. So we have a customer who's a very large diagnostics firm. And a very large percentage of the world's diagnostics are run by this firm. So if you look for literature on mentioning their products, every clinical trial, every test, every experiment will mention often in their methods the diagnostics they used and will mention this company. So they have a flood of content they have to review that might be mentioning their products, but isn't about their products.
Yeah.
There's a much smaller subset of articles that are actually literature on their products themselves, their efficacy, you know, their accuracy, new uses, very different, orders of magnitude different. But NLP could only detect keywords, basically the words in an article, while NLU could understand whether this product was the subject of the article, whether the article was about it and how contextually relevant it was. So providing that search, we were able to take a search frame that might have been hundreds of thousands of articles and distill it down to 1,600. And then using that, we were able to extract the key elements of that data, the features in AI speak, as you know.
Yeah.
And that could things like, what is the clinical analytical data? Is it about a specific therapeutic area? Is it about a specific patient population? And take all that data and surface that so that things that used to be done manually, you know, you would go through it and then you'd have a medical researcher, you know, tick boxes, right, through the Prisma SLR. Instead, the AI can do that for you so that a researcher can have all that data in front of them and very quickly make a determination for clinical exclusion and inclusion.
Interesting. And so if they, so I guess it also has all the links to where the data came from. So if they want to double check something, they could go straight there as well.
Absolutely. And with our intelligent literature monitoring clients, you know, we've both delivered direct to customers. We also worked with a great partner of ours, Anesio Medical, with a number of their customers. What we do is we actually built the largest open access scientific data pool. So we actually have over 40 million abstracts that are linked, but we also have links to over 32 million full text articles. So we're able to link to both the abstract and when available, and it's about 76% of the time it is available, the full text as well, for free for folks on our platform. And of course, we link to stuff if people have licenses where they've licensed, you know, other articles as well.
And so would it update as the journals update? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so actually, most of our customers get weekly reports, but we're actually running in the background daily.
Yeah.
So we're pulling in daily update files. It goes through all of PubMed, all of EuroPMC, all of a bunch of citation databases and preprints and literatures, all the things that people need. And it goes through that and basically reads that in real time. We end up compiling it and mostly delivering it weekly because that's usually the cadence that people are looking at this. But for some people, they're getting it daily when they're like COVID literature where it's just too much.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So what countries is it? Is it covering just everything that PubMed and all of those other databases cover? So pretty much global.
Yeah, it's absolutely global. In fact, one of the things we actually have done is we provide publication analytics on where this is coming from. Not just the research institution, but geographically. So one of the big challenges has been, you know, where is all the literature coming from?
Yeah.
Where are clinical trials happening? You know, we provide that data overlay so that they can see a global map. You know, we've pulled literature in from, you know, in trials that are in hundreds, well over 100 countries. And you know, that, you know, there's an incredible amount of data out there. In fact, you know, we have over 200 million publications in our pool and over 209 million authors. It's basically...
That's incredible.
Everyone that's in there, and it's in a knowledge graph. And what that allows us to do is to show things like geolocation. You could dive in,
yes.
You know, what's all the research happening in Turkey? You know, what's happening in Germany? Which is really key.
Very interesting.
But we can also add new data layers. When you read it, you can find affiliations to life sciences companies or population health data that wasn't in the metadata on that original publication database, but is in the text of the literature.
So for your pharmaceutical clients, how are they using it the most?
So we found a number of use cases. A lot of them are using it, to keep up with the field. You know, that's the first and kind of foundational use case is everyone's deluged. And, you know, frankly, a lot of doctors, you know, they really have struggled to keep up. A lot of teams have struggled to keep up. But if you're going to be the therapeutic lead, you need to know the most relevant and most impactful literature in any week in your field. And that's absolutely critical. And so almost every team we have starts with that. The second thing that they've also done is generate evidence, is actually going through and finding novel evidence about their products, competitor products, and increasingly we're seeing combination therapies. The most impactful data that comes out that week might not be about your product, but might be about a combination product that is very commonly prescribed with your product. And that could have the biggest impact on, let's say, the medical inquiries. Doctors are asking you about that for the next quarter. So that's really important. We've also started to generate assets. So this is really key. You know, the average doctor in these fields would have to read literature, I think, 18 hours a day just to stay on top of things.
Yeah.
There's no way they can.
No.
So for many medical affairs teams, a lot of their value add is doing that work and providing a summary to the doctors. So we actually have a set of tooling called, it's a little awkward name, called Transmutum. And we're actually able to use AI to automatically generate presentations.
Nice.
Including summaries of literature. So we automatically generate PowerPoint slides and decks that will extract, you know, what is, you know, what are all the key things you need to know about a clinical trial? What's the key inclusion, exclusion criteria? What were the patients? What were the products? What were the results? And put that in a very simple, easy to display format.
It's really cool that you can just automatically get that part, you know, downloaded out of it. That's really amazing. How long does it take? So I guess when someone signs up for your service, is it pretty much immediate because your platform's there and it's running 24/7?
So our platform and data pool is immediate.
Yeah.
What typically happens is so basically usually there's a subset of patient population, products, disease states that part of our platform uses a patented process we developed, which is called our cognitive tower, which uses actually layered hierarchical ontologies and these large language models, some really cutting edge AI. Mm-hmm. That does require a little bit of configuration. So it typically takes about 2 weeks of configuration to really understand from the customer what their real focus areas is.
Okay.
And then to basically spin up the right set of both models and ontologies to extract the data that they want to focus on.
And have you got, I assume once someone starts using your service, they basically keep using it because it saves them so much time and effort in having to replace everything.
That's right. We've often started with a single therapeutic area. Mm-hmm. You know, the most common one has been either COVID or oncology, both of which are dealing with just an unbelievable flood of literature.
Sure.
But, you know, as they're finding the additional value around generating assets that could be used by field medical, as they find publication analytics that can support your publication teams, as they are like, wow, a summary of the top literature is useful in many, many ways, and we can pull up the key data. A lot of other therapeutic areas have often kind of stepped up. So a lot of the life sciences companies, you know, they're like, people have gotten just PowerPoint decks before, you know, from maybe a services firm, are now saying, I want this next generation technology. So now we're expanding, you know, neurology, immunology, cardiology, you know, lots of other teams have said, you know, this is a super useful tool for us as well. And it's been geographic. You know, we started mostly serving teams in the United States. Actually, a lot of the teams we serve now are also in Europe and increasingly now in Asia.
Very nice. And I assume you've got probably most therapeutic categories in there, but if a category hadn't been worked on, then you'd take the 2 weeks to set everything up and then it would be basically weekly or daily or whatever they wanted for summaries.
That's right. And instead of building a model for a category, we actually built underlying infrastructure. So we actually have a source set of over 1,050 ontologies that kind of go into our system, and an automated custom ontology is built for a specific product, disease state, and area. So that actually trains a set of models. We have a library of 22 core models. So we basically built a little factory, you might say, of what we call Model Academy, where we take language models that were designed by large companies like Google on general language tasks, like writing emails or websites, but wasn't designed to understand the very complex language of life sciences. And we have an academy, we kind of give it a doctorate, and we kind of give those models the ability to understand the specializations in biomedical terminology on these TAs, and then deploy that very, very rapidly. It can otherwise take years to build ontologies.
Yeah, of course. Yes, I know. And so what would you say would be the hottest topics that people are coming and talking about in this space now?
Oh, that's exciting stuff. So I would say two of the hottest, there's three really hot topics that we hear about a lot. One is our focus on health equity analytics. Mm-hmm. The second is actually a really interesting expansion of plain language summaries, and now AI generated plain language summaries.
Yes.
And the third is how does this fit into omnichannel, which is growing across, you know, not just commercial but now medical. With health equity analytics, this is really key. You know, we still know that in clinical trials. Yes. The clinical trial participants, you know, this is a huge issue where the majority of clinical trial participants in clinical trials are overwhelmingly white and not representing a lot of subpopulations that have unmet needs.
Yes.
And as doctors more and more are looking for precision medicine, they're looking for personalized medicine, or even just data relevant to the population they serve, there's been huge evidence gaps.
Yes.
And I think clinical trial teams are doing an enormous effort to recruit more diverse patient populations, but it takes a long time and a lot of money to run a clinical trial.
Of course.
So we may be getting great diverse data 5 years from now from some of these clinical trials, but if you go into the publication databases like PubMed today, they don't have the metadata around health equity. It's not in there, you can't search on it. You can't find, I want to find all the clinical trial results with a significant percentage of African-American male population that might be really clinically relevant to diseases that are overrepresented in that population, like multiple myeloma.
Yes.
So what we do is we actually go in, we take that corpus, and we actually annotate it, adding in key and missing data that was never collected by the medical field for the last 20 years. Population data, SDOH data, DEI data, and find what's in the text of the article and add it in as metadata. So now you can search, filter, and do this to find the data that's relevant to these populations that is buried in this mountain of literature, but has never been lifted up by the field before.
That sounds like a massive job, but I guess you're using AI to do it.
Exactly. I think manually it'd be far too difficult.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
40 million articles to add in population health data. It's a bottleneck. Sure. But we actually have a partner with AWS. So Amazon's actually put together a $40 million fund for health equity, and they partnered with us to actually provide some of the computing resources.
Nice.
And we're providing the AI so that we're now able to do that on the literature and provide health equity analytics at scale to life sciences companies.
That's really powerful. I actually a part of HBA, and we're doing a whole workshop on that topic. So I might get you involved in that as well. That's fascinating.
Absolutely. I got to say, life science companies are really excited about this.
Yeah.
And this is a real win-win because, and it's very different application of AI. When people talk about AI and equity, typically it's actually about eliminating bias towards, minority populations, underrepresented populations. And what that means is a lot of the technology designed for that is actually eliminating the ability to look at a population.
Yeah.
That's in fact, in medical, you actually want the opposite. You actually have data that's under-annotated, that yes. doesn't have population data, and people can't even find enough relevant data for populations that have been medically underserved. So we have to do a very specific and almost kind of different approach to health equity and AI than what most of the rest of the AI field is doing.
Yeah, kind of the reverse, yeah.
Yeah.
What about the other two hot topics? What are you doing? Are you doing anything in those two?
Absolutely, plain language summaries. This is very exciting. So a big part of our intelligent literature monitoring has actually been our summarization technology. Well, we're able to take both abstracts and full text and summarize it while retaining the most data-rich elements. We actually released at DIA this summer the fact that our summarization technology met the Turing test.
We
And we have a very fun experiment. You can go to the website at Sercero and actually take our AI test on our blog and see whether you can guess of three summaries, which was written by our AI and which was written by medical writers with over 10 years of experience.
It's a nice little test for people listening to the podcast to go to do.
It's a fun experiment. Most people can't do it. I'll just say that we have 95% parity between the AI and the medical writing. Now, look, it's a relatively simple medical task, summarizing an abstract rather than some of the larger ones we do. But and that's a big need. We provide a lot of summarization technology. Summarizing a 1,900-page clinical trial report, hugely valuable, right?
Yeah.
But something that's most exciting for us is plain language summaries.
Sure.
As you know, as literature gets more and more dense, particularly in these areas like oncology or, areas of precision medicine, patients and patient advocates really can't access and understand what's in the literature. And so there's this huge gap between specialist physicians and frankly, even general and family physicians, which frankly struggle to understand the specialty literature. And then patients who are often struggling to navigate multiple fields of specialty, multiple areas of practice. And in the EU, they're now mandating plain language summaries for life science published research.
Yeah,
I think it's a really important thing. But what people don't realize is there's been a field of readability analytics that's been out for a while. And what we're now doing is plain language summaries. If you take the terms, one of the big core things in ontologies is synonyms,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's preferred medical synonyms. But if you actually apply the right language model, you can actually summarize an article down to a reading grade level, you know, targeting a 9th grade level or a 10th grade level, the same okay. that might be actually mandated. For example, in the United States, insurance policies are supposed to be readable at a 9th grade reading level to make it accessible to the general public.
Sure.
Literature's never had that before. And now that it's happening, this means that a lot of companies have invested a lot in plain language summaries. And people, medical writers are doing it, but it's being done fully manually.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's expensive, it's slow. And so it's really only done for literature that is maybe summarizing a clinical trial that someone's already invested millions, tens of millions, or sometimes even $1 billion into.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's 40 million more articles that are not summarized and not accessible. So how could you do that at larger scale? AI. And so that's why we're doing AI with plain language summaries, so that we can take an entire corpus of those updates of 5,000 and make them more accessible.
Nice.
And support both companies to do this faster, better, and cheaper, because it's really important to give patients more access to these articles. It still needs to be vetted by medical writers. It's
of
not
course.
Going to replace them,
yeah.
but it can make their job a lot easier.
Yes. I mean, if it's 90% there, then it's cutting down the time dramatically that they need to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the final hot topic, do you last, work in that as well?
Last is one you hear all the time, which is omnichannel. And I think just the big thing here is, you know, people of doing multi-channel outreach and engagement inbound to, mm-hmm. you know, healthcare providers and key opinion leaders for a while. But literature has often not been seen as a channel. Mm-hmm. It's been seen as something publications team track, that field medical needs to track for updates of the field. But the fact is that literature is actually alive in that, you know, it gets tweeted by healthcare providers and key opinion leaders. People engage in those tweets in real time. People do new articles with citations that might contrast or support that article.
Yeah.
It's not just about if it cites it, but does it actually agree with that article? That feed of engagement and realizing that literature and the scientific engagement process is a living thing is a channel into itself.
Yeah.
So adding in literature so that you can actually track your own publications, those of, you know, other key products in the field or innovations in the field, or just tracking that conversation between what's called altmetrics, citations with those smart citation data. So you actually know where the conversation is trending, whether people are actually agreeing or disagreeing, scientific sentiment. We're finding literature is an increasingly, and that engagement around it, around those authors, mm-hmm. is an increasingly valuable element to achieve true omnichannel, where
yeah.
you're trying to gather the four elements of identity in here, that in the scientific world, that and that as people, as physicians and providers, as those who are engaged in the public space, which might be social or at a Congress or elsewhere, and how people engage with a life sciences company, often typically within your CRM or your medical information system. And tying those four together
yes.
Is really key. And without really getting literature into that standard, you're missing one of the four key realms.
That's a really good point, because a lot of the omnichannel, you know, you've got the MSLs and the sales reps who are targeting the doctors. So, you know, having the literature there makes so much sense.
Exactly. And multi-channel is about having lots of ways to reach someone. Omnichannel
yeah.
is about engaging with people where they are.
Exactly.
And then maintaining a consistent journey. So literature is one of those journeys, and it's important to keep part of that.
Yeah. What about the cost compared to the traditional approaches to doing this? I mean, I can see that it would cost a lot less, but what have you found with your clients, the reduction in costs in changing to this approach?
So, I would say two things. One, life sciences is an area where other fields may use business analysts for tasks that, you know, like insurance does this all the time, where it's a relatively low cost person who's often using maybe something like an Excel sheet to do a lot of data processing. The challenge in life sciences is that can be done for some tasks, but for most of the stuff in medical or clinical, an enormous amount of this requires people who are fully trained medical professionals. doctors, pharmacists, you know, PharmDs, and PhDs. And these are people who spend, you know, sometimes even MD PhDs. They might spend 8, 12 years getting advanced degrees and then 10 years working in life sciences. It's really a shame how many really manual data wrangling tasks those people are still dealing with. So there is a lot of cost savings on taking that out of their and moving them to a place where they're overseeing the work product, doing the final reviews, edits, bridging it, rather than the, you know, no medical director should be manually tagging insights when you can automatically say, you know, this is a product, this is a gastroenterologist, this happened in, interaction happened in Minnesota, and they're worried about reimbursement issues. That can be done already with our technology. So the savings are significant, just the productivity savings.
Yeah.
We've typically found, you know, we've had teams that were, had a dedicated team, just a couple people. It was, you know, with the cost in medical, you know, a 6-person dedicated team could be $2 million a year.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of savings when you can have someone that oversees a system that is doing much of that processing and they're able to sit on top of it. It's much more productive.
Yeah.
And life sciences has got that in R&D. R&D has really advanced computational workbenches. They don't expect them to use Bunsen burners in the same way as much anymore. But medical affairs and clinical sometimes haven't had that. So that there's a lot of the productivity savings. But I actually think those aren't the real value. The real value is something like, what is the change in the life cycle of how the data can impact a company?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have people, you know, they're reviewing insights on a quarterly basis. They're doing an SLR once, twice a year, and it lags, you know, weeks, months, quarters behind data just because of the manual processing. And, you know, we did a webinar earlier this year about the one of the chief medical officers who said insights have a half-life and they rapidly decay. And the more, the faster you have them, the more it can transform your practice. Do you find a new indication 6 months faster for a drug?
Nice.
Do you find data that's relevant to a subpopulation while you're still in the launch phase and actually improve access to a whole bunch of patients much, much faster? Before, let's say, a whole set of drugs are approved and there's a lot of confusion in the market. Those things can be transformative for the adoption of, you know, this data. And that has the strategic value that's frankly almost priceless.
Yes. So it's really augmenting the process dramatically. And then the humans can basically use their knowledge and expertise to basically oversee the output.
You got it much clearer than me. Yes, that's absolutely right. And frankly, we think people have spent this much time and effort to become real masters of their field.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to put that judgment and that expertise to work and not get bogged down so much in some of the data processing.
In the manual, day to day.
They're incredible people that work in these companies and they deserve that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame to me. Could just be trawling and doing all the manual stuff for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for coming on today. For any pharma companies listening or other companies that want to get in touch with Richard and his team at Sorcero, go to www.sorcero.com and you'll be able to see a lot more there and you can reach out to the team. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and I look forward to hearing from you again.
It was a great pleasure and looking forward to talking to you in the future. Thank you, Andre.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.